Hey, it's Tom Matthews from Return to Living Dead and Friday the 13th, part 6, to name a few. And you're listening to the Bean Joe Grizzly Podcast. Enjoy.
Let me introduce myself. I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.
What up, Mean Militia? I'm Mean Joe Grizzly, and when I'm not researching ways to stop a time-traveling megalomaniac from the 31st century from conquering the present day, I'm at the Grizzly Cave, watching movies, reading comics, listening to metal, and of course, crushing beers. And since this week will be his first appearance on the big screen, I'm going to crack open the Grizzly Guide and talk about Marvel's time-traveling tyrant, Kang the Conqueror. Now, here's the thing. Just like most comic origins, it's all over the place, and it can be confusing. And Kang's is probably one of the most confusing of them all. And that's even for avid comic readers. Kang's origins and beginnings are just like the many different versions of himself, spread across multiple comics from the 1960s all the way to 2022. And his attempts to conquer all of time and space have brought him into conflict with many characters throughout the Marvel multiverse. From the Avengers to the Fantastic Four to Thanos and Doctor Doom. So I'm going to try to put together the most relevant pieces of these comics as well as the most important versions of Kang and give y'all the most well-rounded explanation. But before we get started, I want y'all to take a second and follow the show on all social media platforms as well as joining my Mean Militia on the show's official Facebook group by clicking the links down in the episode description. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the show on whatever platform y'all listen on. By doing this, y'all support the show and help me continue to talk to y'all about all forms of badassery. So let's start this journey through space and time by cracking open the Grizzly Guide. Alright, before we begin our origin of Kang the Conqueror, let's talk about a few things. There are many different versions of Kang, and when I say many, I mean in this universe, there are infinite versions of Kang. But I will only be talking about four versions, because the rest, they really don't matter. These versions are the most important versions that I'm going to be discussing, and I will be distinguishing between all of them when I talk about them and their role in this story. I will not be giving the complete full history of Kang the Conqueror because this episode would be hours long if I did, and y'all don't want to hear anyone, much less me, talk that long about one subject, or any subject for that matter. Now, with all that out of the way, let's begin. Our journey begins in the Marvel multiverse on Earth 6311 in the 31st century, in a utopia where disease is gone, technology is at its peak, and conflict is all but extinct. Here resides Nathaniel Richards, a scholar, scientist, and genius that legitimately just sits in boredom studying history. Nathaniel always sought a cure for his boredom, and one day, he found it. Nathaniel would discover time-traveling technology supposedly made by his ancestor. That ancestor is supposedly either Dr. Doom or Mr. Fantastic, aka Reed Richards. But Marvel has never confirmed this to be true. Now, it would make sense that it would be Reed Richards. But I, however, and a lot of other fans think that it is Dr. Doom due to the fact that this seems to be Doom's time pad. Dr. Doom is a genius, and he has the ability to travel through time, and he's had it for a long time in this publication history. So it just makes sense that this would be his ancestor. But I digress. So he would take that technology and he would build a time ship in the image of the Great Sphinx of Egypt. And he would travel back to the days of the Egyptian Empire and he would don the name of Ramatut and become the Pharaoh of Egypt. Now, he would rule Egypt for an undisclosed period of time until he was driven out of Egypt and back into the time stream by none other than the Fantastic Four. Now, the reason that the Fantastic Four were even in ancient Egypt to begin with is because Ben Grimm has a girlfriend named Alicia Masters, and she is blind. So what ended up happening is that Reed and Sue just so happened to be looking at Egyptian exhibits at some museum, I believe, and in the hieroglyphics they seen that a pharaoh was once blind, and then he ate some kind of herb that seemed to be radioactive or some other mystical something, and it cured his blindness. So in an attempt to cure Alicia Masters' blindness, they went back in time, and when they get there, that's when they see Ramatut. And Ramatut confirms that he ate an herb and it restored his sight, because upon arriving in ancient Egypt he lost his sight temporarily. But you know, old comics have weird reasons on how certain things go about, but it was also back in the 60s. But all of these events took place in Fantastic Four number 19 in October of 1963, and it was written by the man himself, Stan Lee, and drawn by the legendary Jack Kirby. Now, Nathaniel would attempt to return to the 31st century after being driven out of Egypt, but he would overshoot his trajectory and end up in the 40th century. Now, here he would observe two groups of barbarians at war with one another using advanced technology and weaponry that they truly had no idea how to properly use. And he would become their leader and harness their tech and create like this advanced suit of armor that would give him a variety of abilities such as superhuman strength, speed, stamina, and durability, along with other abilities like energy, holographic, and force field projection, as well as a little technomancy. And this is his signature suit that he wears throughout his publication history. He would also then rename himself Kane the Conqueror and begin his conquest of time and space. He would begin his campaign of conquest by traveling back to the 20th century, where he would battle Earth's mightiest heroes, the Avengers. And he would completely decimate them with his technology and weaponry and capture them. Eventually, though, the Avengers would escape and face off against Kang once again, this time taking a very, very, very close victory. I think it was even something really weird, like some kind of MacGuffin that the Avengers actually used to defeat Kang. Like the Wasp found some kind of prototype gun that Hank Pym, aka Giant Man at the time, had created that like shoots some kind of acid or something, and it melted Kang's armor, and that's what allowed them to get the upper hand. But nevertheless, it worked. Like I said, back in the day, comics were real, real weird. So after defeating Kang, they forced him to retreat back to the 41st century. Now, all of these events took place in the pages of Avengers number 8 in September of 1964, that was also written by Stan Lee and drawn by Jack Kirby. Now, you're seeing that there's two different versions of Kang at the moment, and they both aren't really reconciled with the reader yet, if that makes any sense. At this time, we don't know that these two characters are the same person, if that makes any sense. That's why this is very confusing, but we'll clarify that later. When Kang actually makes his return, he would battle the Avengers once again in Avengers number 11, but not necessarily. He actually attacks the Avengers by making a perfect clone robot of Spider-Man. Again, old comics are weird. And have him attack the Avengers. And honestly, the perfect clone robot Spider-Man takes the Avengers to the woodshed. He literally beats all of them. And it's just ridiculous. And honestly, at the time, it was perceived that Spider-Man could beat all the Avengers. Don't know why, but I mean, he even pumped all the X-Men back in the day, but I'm going out on a tangent now. But the only reason why they won is because the real Spider-Man showed up and joined the fight, and they quickly defeated the robot and foiled Kane's plans once again. Now, he would then, later, he would capture the Avengers and take them to the 40th century. And what was his goal this time? Well, to impress a girl. So, again, old comics. So, this is taking place in issues 23 and 24 of the Avengers. And these issues are crucial because it is here where we're introduced to Ravonna Renslayer. Now, if you're wondering who Ravonna Renslayer is or why that name sounds familiar, if you watch the Loki TV show, Ravonna Renslayer was the head of the TVA. Now, whether or not they are going to tie her to Kang like they do in the comics, or just keep her as, hey, it's this person that was in season one of Loki, that's yet to be seen. I think that actress has been signed on to come back for Loki season two, but I'm not quite sure. But either way, it's unclear now if they're going to use her in the same capacity as they did in the comics. But Ravonna Renslayer is the princess of this kingdom in the 40th century that Kang has control over. And Kang is madly in love with her. But of course, Ravonna doesn't reciprocate his feelings. So after his attempts failed to win her heart, Kang gives her an ultimatum. Be his bride, or he will conquer and destroy her kingdom. She declines, and his generals begin the attack. And after this futile battle that the Avengers and the forces of Ravonna Renslayer put up, they are essentially defeated. So Kang spares Ravonna Renslayer and her people, and this act of mercy is looked upon as weakness by his generals. So they attempt to commit a coup to overthrow Kang, and the Tyrant of Time would have to swallow his pride and join forces with the Avengers to stop his generals. And they would succeed, and Ravonna would reveal that Kang's acts of mercy and his valiant efforts to retake control of the situation kind of had made him grow on her, and she's actually had some feelings for him. But before the two could embrace, one of the rogue generals would attempt to shoot Kang in a last-ditch effort to kill him, and tragically, Ravonna would jump in the way and be killed. Now, Kang would then kill that general dead right there. I can't remember his name. It's like Blatar or something. It don't matter. He's dead. And Kang would kill him and then place Ravonna in like a stasis chamber that he would hopefully in the future be able to restore her life. And then he would send the Avengers back to their timeline like he promised. So I wanted to include this story because of Ravonna Renslayer being introduced. And she's a big part of Kang's character and at times his motivation, especially in his more recent updated origin that was released in 2021 called Kang the Conqueror, Only Myself Left to Conquer, written by Colin Kelly and drawn by Carlos Magno. Now, this story really focuses on Kang and his relationship with Ravonna Renslayer, and if it becomes relevant in the MCU, I will cover it in the future. The reason why I didn't cover it, I know it is an up-to-date origin, but the reason why I didn't cover it and present that as his new origin is because that story really is dependent on you understanding the difference between Ramatut, Kang, and a couple of other characters that we're about to talk about. If you don't know at least a general idea about those characters, that story would have been confusing as hell, and it would have been just completely worthless for this video. So I decided not to cover that. But in the future, if Ravonna Renslayer becomes relevant to the MCU, then I will 100% cover it for y'all. Now, there are two other versions of Kang that I want to talk about. And one we've already been introduced to in the Loki TV show. And that is He Who Remains. Now, he is not known as He Who Remains in the comics. He is known as Immortus. And the best way to explain this version is at some point, Nathaniel made his way to Limbo. And this is a realm in Marvel where all time can be viewed all at once. And upon arriving here, he observed what his actions would lead to. And he's also approached by the Time Masters. Now, obviously in the Loki TV show, spoilers, the Time Masters are not real, but they are very much real in the comics. Now, they offer Nathaniel a somewhat like position to preserve the timeline, and he accepts in order to prevent all this stuff that he doesn't want to happen with his future self to happen. Now, it's weird, but the best way to look at Immortus is essentially Immortus is Kane's final destination. He is destined to become Immortus. And of course, neither Immortus nor Kang want to allow that to happen. Immortus doesn't want Kang to become the Conqueror, and Kang doesn't want to become Immortus. So they become mortal enemies. And this version was introduced in Avengers number 10 in November 1964 and was also written by Stan Lee and drawn by Jack Kirby. And Immortus wasn't tied to Kang, because again, we are not, as the reader at this time, we're not really aware that Ramatut, Kang, and now Immortus are all the same person at different points in time or whatnot. And we didn't, they didn't get tied together until Avengers number 269. So the final version of Kang that I want to talk about is Iron Lad. Now, at some point, Kang runs into his 16-year-old self. And when he does, he starts to tell him and guide him into the path to becoming Kang the Conqueror. But this version of Nathaniel rejects this and vows to never become Kang. So he takes future technology in the form of an Iron Man-esque type suit, and he travels back to the 21st century, and he helps form the Young Avengers under the moniker of Iron Lad. And of course, becomes a mortal enemy to Kang. And I wanted to talk about Iron Lad because it seems to me that Kevin Feige is leading up to forming the Young Avengers team in some kind of capacity eventually. And if he's already announced it, I guess I missed it. I don't remember seeing anything about Young Avengers in the big reveal at Comic-Con a couple years ago, but he may have. But they kind of have all the parts to do it. They have both of Wanda's kids, even though they're kind of alternate timelines versions of those characters, and they're kind of young. But you have Kate Bishop, and they introduce a young Nathaniel Richards. They got him, and They've pretty much got everybody that we got. We got Ant-Man's daughter, Cassie, who's going to be giant girl or whatnot. They have the roster if they want to go ahead and do it. So we'll see what happens with that. But again, I just wanted to briefly mention him while we're talking about Kang, because he's kind of one of the important versions of Kang. And honestly, guys, that's not all there is to know about Kang the Conqueror. And Because, like I said, this episode would be hours long if I did that, if I gave y'all this full explanation. And honestly, my head would fucking explode, because this guy's stuff is all over the place. There's no specific straightforward, like, really guide to learning all of Kang's origins and history, because it's scattered throughout. Like, he's an Avengers bad guy, but he faces the Fantastic Four, and then I think now he's actually appearing in the Venom storyline that Al Ewing's doing right now, which is crazy, but and really good too. You should check that out. But his this character has been around for a long time, and it's just his stuff's been retconned so much and changed, and this has been added and this has been taken away. But honestly, most of the other stuff is irrelevant to me giving y'all an explanation of the character. If any of it becomes relevant as Phase 5 unfolds, we'll cover it. And Kang is a great villain, and he was bigger in the earlier days of Marvel's publication history, but he has resurfaced here and there in recent years and gave the Avengers a run for their money on more than one occasion. So I just hope that they do him justice in the MCU with Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. But before we wrap up, I want to start giving y'all some reading recommendations at the end of these Grizzly Guide episodes. So if you want to know more about Kang, why don't you start by reading the Fantastic Four issue number 19, Fantastic Four Annual number 2, Avengers issues 8, 10, 11, 23, 24, 267, 268, and 269, as well as Kang, the Saga of the Once and Future Conqueror, and the more recent release, Kang the Conqueror, Only Myself to Conquer. Now, y'all can find these at your local comic shop, or you can read them digitally on Amazon's Comixology app. I do both. I'll read a lot on the Comixology app, but if I like the story enough, I will go out and buy the physical copy of it. But Comixology is actually it pays for itself, guys. If you go get Comixology, you can, I think it's like $5.99 a month, and you get their unlimited membership where you can read a lot of these comics for free. Well, not for free, but they're included in your membership. Like, I'm pretty sure most of these comics I read for this episode were like all on the unlimited membership, so I didn't really have to buy a lot of these. As far as like when you do buy comics with the Comixology app, yeah, you get a discount with that. So you automatically get a discount on whatever purchases that you make, and you can also read a lot of these comics for free. Kind of pays for itself, guys. So if you want to get into comics, I recommend getting the Comixology app and getting the unlimited plan. And with that, we bring another episode to an end. Thank you all so much for your continued support. Without y'all, the show isn't possible. If you like this episode, please consider subscribing to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to click the links in the description below to follow me on all social media platforms. I also want to thank Carl Casey at White Bat Audio for the awesome background music that I use for my episodes, especially for the intro and outro tracks. His music is dope. Go check it out. He's on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Music. Guys, music's amazing. And guys, that's it. Next is going to be our first MCU offering of 2023 with Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. I'll have that review up as quick as I can possibly get it out. And hopefully this episode will give y'all a better understanding of Kang's comic origins. If not, that's the best I could do, guys. his history and origin is crazy. He's literally got one of the most convoluted and insane comic histories ever. So I did my best, and I know I left a lot out, but I didn't feel like that the stuff that I did leave out was relevant to giving y'all just an origin of the character. He's pretty cool. he's just real complicated. But until next time, I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.